Welcome to the Kelly Patrick Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. In today's episode, I am joined by two returning guests, good friends of the show. I have in one corner Alexander Welch. Alexander is a brown belt with two stripes. For some reason, Jason Dempster hasn't given him another stripe on his brown belt in a long time, but I don't want to get into that right now. Alexander Welch is not only a brown belt jiu-jitsu instructor at Southern Indiana Martial Arts, right across the river from Louisville, but he also, I would describe him as more of a right-leaning kind of populist, almost like a nationalist type political ideology type guy, but very sharp guy. He's had a lot of success with debates on the Kelly Patrick Show in the past, and he is debating in today's episode against Charles Altendorf. Charles is a very active member for many years of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, also a returning guest and good friend of the show. They're debating the topic of should parks, national parks, all parks across the country, be privatized or should they be ran by the government? So very fascinating, very nerdy topic. I really enjoyed, you know, learning a lot. This is the type of episode I personally have to listen back to and do some research on, things like that. They both know a whole lot more about the topic than I do. So I really appreciate everyone tuning into the show. If you're a fan of the Kelly Patrick Show, I ask that you please send some referrals the way of my health insurance practice. MedicareStoreUSA.com is my website. Anyone who needs health insurance anywhere across the country, in particular in Kentucky, Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, or Florida, regardless of your age, in particular, the majority of my revenue comes from Medicare sales. So someone who's on disability under the age of 65 and is eligible for Medicare, or perfect referral would be someone who's turning age 65. I'm an independent broker. That means I can represent Anthem, Humana, United Healthcare. I can represent, you know, the drug coverage, the traditional supplement, all everything that goes into the Medicare experience. I'm just as good as anyone at it, and I would love your referrals to continue to build my health insurance practice. That business being in existence and thriving will continue to allow me to have more episodes of the Kelly Patrick Show in the future. I want to thank Louisville Combat Academy for their continued support, 7908 Beulah Church Road. They have a great kickboxing program. Graham Gordon teaches every Tuesday and Thursday, 6:30 p.m. I attend the classes there on Thursdays. A.J. Jenkins, Professor A.J. Jenkins, runs a great no-gi 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu program. And they have a very strong kids program as well. I also want to thank Matt McCarthy, the longtime producer of The Kelly Patrick Show. He is a Veercast Digital Media. He can help you with any, you know, event recording, aerial drone photography, anything that you need. If you want to get your own podcast running, contact Matt McCarthy. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. Enjoy the debate. Welcome to The Kelly Patrick Show. Thank you so much for tuning in today's episode. I am joined by Alexander Welch, returning guest. Alex, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
I appreciate you having me on this bully pulpit of yours.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the bully pulpit is a good description. I'll take it. Alex has been on the show a couple times prior.
Yeah, I think three.
Three times prior. Only one of them was a debate?
Two were debates.
Two were debates. Remind me, you debated Michael Ballard.
Yes, and that was about whether or not the right wing was innately more warmongering, which is not too too pertinent at the moment, or not too, you know, in hindsight with that argument. But I was still arguing, for what it's worth, the base and the voters, not the politicians.
The government.
So Trump has done a good job of losing a huge portion of his base through this Iran war.
Sure. And what was the other debate? I'm sorry. I don't know.
Kamala versus Trump. Like, which was a better pick?
Oh, and that was the jiu-jitsu guy in Nashville.
Yes.
His name's slipping me right now. But
me too. I'm sorry, jiu-jitsu guy in Nashville.
He's a black belt. He's a badass.
You're a good opponent.
Randall, maybe?
Randall. Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, Randall.
Okay. We appreciate
it. Something with an S.
Randall Sanders.
There we go.
Randall Sanders. And I would love to have him back on for a debate.
Yeah.
So also returning guest, we have Charles Altendorf. Charles, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I think it's you've been on a couple times prior, at least how many times?
Yes. I'd say two. It was two.
This will be the first time in a debate capacity.
Nice to meet you, Charles.
Yep. Nice to meet you, Alexander, however you want to be called.
It's fine. I don't care.
Captain Alex. You look like you could go on safari in that kit.
That's the idea. I'm wearing my Teddy Roosevelt outfit that I bought.
There you go.
While at work at like 11 p.m.
Charles, have you ever debated someone wearing an outfit like this prior? Has this ever happened?
No, I'm trying to remember the last time I debated someone. I haven't really done the long form recorded version. You know, typically it's firing shots over various platforms, but it's fine. It's cool. This is I feel like I'm underdressed for the occasion, actually, but it'll be all right.
So today's episode is a debate between Charles and Alex regarding the topic. And you guys tell me if this description sounds good. Should parks, not just national parks, should parks be privatized or should they be ran by the government? Does that sound like a good description to both you guys?
That sounds pretty fair to me.
That'll work. Yeah, that'll work.
You both accept those terms?
I accept those terms. I will give the caveat that there are several organizations that I have been at, and I want to put this out there right at the beginning. These are my personal views. I'm not representing those organizations, so, you know, don't sue me for slander or anything.
Okay. Is that what someone says before they go on a racist tirade?
Yeah, always.
No, I'm kidding.
I mean, there'll
be no race involved.
I'm kidding. He's a libertarian. They're not racist.
Yeah. No.
All right, so what I'd like to do, we're not doing a specific format for the debate. We're going to have it somewhat be loose, you know, kind of give and take. I think you're both in good spirits with this, well-intentioned. No real malice here. So who would like to give an opening statement regarding the topic?
I would at least like to get a baseline for where we're both at. You're out in nature right now. I'm assuming you love nature, correct?
I guess it's a proper interpretation.
You would like...
You know, nature's kind of a vague term, right? You know, I'm out on my back deck. I have a half-acre lot. So, you know, better than nothing.
Have either of you ever been to national parks? I'm assuming you have. You're probably in your 40s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been over, I guess you could call that trail out by the Smokies, the Chimney Rock. I would say that's probably in the national park there. Of course, I've been in the National Forest, in the Daniel Boone National Forest a lot, obviously.
Right.
And then I also went to, I've been to the National Lakeshore at both Indiana Dunes and over at, the Upper Peninsula.
Well, have either of you ever, say, been to the Grand Canyon or Yosemite, Yellowstone?
Anywhere? No, I have not been out west.
I've
been to Mammoth Cave.
What did you guys think of Mammoth Cave?
Very cool.
Very cool. Okay. Debate over. It's been a national park for decades, so clearly it's working. You know, a lot of these national parks go back. Yellowstone was the first. Yosemite was originally a state park, but then later got designated as a national park. The whole thing with this is these have existed for over 100 years now. Most of the ones we know started around 1919, 1924. So it is working. Now, that's not going to say that there haven't been calamities along the way. Things have burned down, say, back in the 80s, where they were a little bit more myopic. But I would put it to you that this is more science-related, where obviously we know more now. You know, the private industry was giving pregnant women thalidomide and getting people born with deformities. So we can always go back and forth about who is more catastrophic. Look at this one example of something being bad. But the fact that I maintain that these parks still exist, they're still here for generations upon generations to go and enjoy, enough back that this would date back for some of them. Your great, 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 great grandpa was going to them. And it's still, you know, there are differences. There are roads now. There are changes along the way. But that's going to be my argument here, is that, yes, there have been mistakes. There can always be mistakes. I'm assuming you're going to go with some public choice theory arguments. Maybe tell me about some, you know, South African conservative ships where they, you know, they protect the animals there, which, and this is the thing, I'm not going to tell you that a private owner can't change or can't maintain a good reserve. What I would put it to you, though, is that, so the whole reason I even thought of this debate is that I think government is innately inefficient. It is almost always corrupt. It is almost always poor at managing, and there's almost always, you know, corruption, pilfering, right? But the whole thing with this is, I made this a thought experiment. What's one thing government does better? Because if I can't name one thing, then I'm probably an ideologue, right? So we should at least be able to say, well, is there not one thing that they can do better? That's when I came up with parks, because we want it to be unchanged. The whole thing with the market is it's fast. It's fast acting, it's quick, it's reactive, and it's aggressive. And you want that in most things in life. Life's a fight. Okay, you want to be the first to the market. You want to be the first inventor. You want to be the first to come up with an idea and then put it out to the masses and make the most amount of money. And that works. And, you know, it works when it comes to innovation. Hey, we just came up with a new medicine that's going to help people. Let's get it out there as fast and as quickly as possible. When it comes to making changes at a level, when it comes to nature, though, you don't want it to be fast moving. You want, ironically, you want the government inefficiency. You want it to be a slow rolling thing, because you never know. You know, we're trying to pass these lands on to the next generation. And I'm trying to do my best to avoid all the flowery speech about how resplendent nature is, because that's almost always what these debates will come down to, is me talking about, you know, the person in my shoes talking about how wonderful trees are and Grand Canyon. Of course it is. If anyone doesn't think that, then this is if you don't think that, then this is an easy debate, because very clearly humans need nature. It's healing for us. And it should be available to the utmost amount of us, not just the richest of the rich, you know. I've talked for a lot, so I'm going to shut up.
No, I would put the premise to you that there's actually several examples of private sector, we'll call it nonprofit, but nonprofit parks that are not government run. And I would say that their interests are less under siege. So the examples I was going to point to are here locally. Berea, Berea College runs a... they run the, the Pinnacles. And I would argue the only reason why the Pinnacles were able to sustain themselves is they were able to sue and win in court an eminent domain case against Eastern Kentucky Power. Now, conversely, we would say, though, you know, the national parks, obviously, they have the resources of the federal government to protect them. But, I mean, if it's becomes between having a national park or an interstate, does maybe the government come in and intervene there and destroy the terrain of that area? You know, and then, of course, we have Bernheim Forest. You know, that's a very nice resource that is also a nonprofit organization that's not directly government run. And I think the issue I see constantly is, you know, I used to live in Indiana and use their state park system. And it would blow my mind. They would be under such siege from so many different activist groups because, again, they're supposed to be beholden to the public, right? So they're not even supposed to act in their own interest necessarily. And they would get people mad at them when they're just logging some trees to make some money or take out some brush, you know? So I would put the point to you that I have such respect for the caretakers of these public and natural spaces that I want to remove. I think if they can have, I want to remove the restrictions on them of the pretense that they have to serve for some greater public good, and that they could better serve the interests of that private park by, again, having their own control over it. And, you know, we've seen this with several instances of sort of manners and smaller things. I think the big issue here that constantly comes up with this preserving land thing is more of an issue of scale. I think that several private nature things exist on smaller scales of perhaps even 20 to 40 acres. You know, maybe the Biltmore Estate, you know, that's another example of lots of lands around a private institution. But I think people kind of also romanticize this open space, and that's why they think it needs to be government run. But conversely, that means that for all of this space that we're preserving, we're spending all this money on, you know, Rangers and all this other stuff. And we talked about this before, which we actually don't disagree on, is, you know, it needs to be paid for, right? We talk about we both would like fees. But I think the issue you will find with that is because it's always going to come back to this, it's part of the government and the public good, there will always be certain parks that people will push for not to have fees because it's supposed to be open to the whole public. And I think at some point it starts to drain resources, and we see, you know, again, we talk about degradation, you know, we have constant wildfires breaking out in national parklands in California. And again, I think that comes back to, again, this public, just having to have this other level where we think we're trying to serve all the actors because we're calling it public. Whereas I think the land is better protected when they're protecting their interests of the conserving that particular land.
Okay. Well, you brought up some things that we definitely need to talk about here. So when it comes to the fires, number one, there are people who are just flat out wrong. I mean, you can look to California in general and just see how they mismanage everything. They let the Palisades burn down, you know, billions of dollars, all sorts of people's homes ruined. It's an atrocity for how inept their government is. And that's, again, I mean, again, that's how I got to this topic, is government's almost always worse. Now, this comes back to, say, the Stephen Mather and Horace Albright perspectives. Whenever they were running the national parks, there were certain things that they didn't know. Okay, so they saw predators as bad. Predators bad, right? Bears, whatever, right? These are just bad creatures. Well, they're not. They're part of an ecosystem, things that we know now. That's kind of what my point was earlier about. As we learn more and as science changes, we have to change with it. But with that in mind, one of the big things is we had Smokey the Bear back in the 80s, right?
And
we had all these things about, you know, be responsible, don't start fires. And of course, that makes sense on paper, right? But it's kind of a stitch in time saves nine situation, because there were no fires for so long that amount of brush managed to build up, and then bang, massive fire. So whereas you would have, say, lost 10 acres, we lost a thousand acres in this great fire back in 1988. But let's get into the numbers. So you talked about costing resources and the price, right? And that's, no matter what, when we come down to it, again, I'm trying to avoid the normal leftist point of view of just telling you that, hey, you know, nature's beautiful, which it is, and it is. We need it. We need it to be healed. I think that. I think our descendants need that, and it's our responsibility to pass it on to them. All the normal talking points are accurate in this regard. But let's just talk numbers. Let's talk ROIs, okay? The National Park Service costs 1/15 of 1% of our total spending. Now, obviously, our total spending is ridiculous, and I'm not telling you there shouldn't be auditing, because there can always be corruption and fraud and everything else, so we definitely need to still audit everything that we spend our money on as taxpayers. But 1/15 of a percent, it comes down to $10.55 per American, per taxpaying American, to maintain our national parks. Now, it's hard for me to tell you what to do with your money, but $10.55 sounds like a bargain. Okay. On top of that, that's what we're spending. What are we bringing in? So in 2024, we saw 332 million people visit these parks, which is an economic boon to the entire surrounding areas. Okay. The parks themselves generated $29.4 billion. And then the surrounding areas, the indirect spending from people going there, was $55.6 billion. So we're talking a 14.6 return, 14 times ROI. So just from a monetary perspective, that's hard to argue, and it's hard to say that we're really, that the government is misspending in this one instance. I don't know if I could say this in many other things, but I think it's a pretty responsible, and even just from a coldly utilitarian, pragmatic point of view, it's bringing in the money.
I would argue, though, that by doing that, it is emboldening the government, which is not necessarily bad. You know, it just depends on who the actors are, good or bad. But I would say in this case, you know, certain programs get emboldened then. You know, when we talked about that, you know, they make a bad decision with predators or stuff like that. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen in privately managed parks. But what I would put to that is, you know, I think the incentives are a little bit on smaller scales, right? So, you know, Bernheim Forest is going to do what's best for Bernheim Forest, not what's best for all 80 forests around. And, you know, again, that's sort of me coming back to being very, I think we self-gloss this that I'm the libertarian here, but, you know, that's coming to an ultra competitory atmosphere. And I do understand, you know, the reason why this topic became popular was in the 1800s, right? There was already this debate raging in the 1800s when industrialism took over.
Right.
But I think, you know, again, I see these caretakers, you know, and I've spent a lot of time around sort of more historical sites. So, you know, Mike's experience with that is like, oh, hey, we preserved a house and it just happens to have 40 acres with it and fields and stuff.
So what
right?
sort of historical site? Could you expound on that for me?
Oh, yeah. So all kinds, right? So I've been at every level, right? There's state historic sites. There's private sites.
I'm sorry. Can you name just one? I'm not.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So like my wife, for instance, she used to work at the William Litley House in Southern Kentucky. That was a state historic site.
Do you think that would be better with a Ferris wheel and a roller coaster or just a water slide connected to it?
You know, they were trying to put a racetrack in.
Do you think that was a good idea?
You know, I don't know what would really drive anything there. It's kind of out of the way. The whole point to see it is it was the first brick house west of the Alleghenies.
Right. So that's what I'm asking you. Should we maintain it as that, the first brick house west of the Alleghenies?
I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it, if it justifies it, if it can't support itself on the own, you know.
But so maybe we should replace it with a casino then.
You know, that's the other extreme there, right? I mean, I will say, Cassius Clay's house went belly up, right? They were trying to, the state no longer offered to maintain it, so EKU has bought it, which, you know, that's an interesting question, right? Does this stuff need to be preserved or hang on? You know, even in capitalist economics, people all the time complain when their favorite restaurant closes,
right?
And then another one opens up.
That's the market speaking. That's understandable. And I mean, that's definitely a point of debate too, is what should be set aside as a national park. You know, if you just start naming every garbage piece of land that should be, you know, I'm not telling you there should be no industry. I'm not telling you there shouldn't be any sort of logging. Clearly we need these things. But if you let the market go and you let private companies go, we can see what happened with this in Niagara Falls on the American side. There was nothing but toll booths, disgusting eyesores, money gouging. I mean, it became a hellhole quickly until the state of New York bought it back. So whenever left unchecked, I mean, this happened with the Hetch Hetchy Valley floor where, you know, private industry decided to dam it. Bam, it's flooded. It's under hundreds of feet of water, gone. We don't get to see something that was very special for generations, before predates our country. There were people here before us. They loved it. We love it. Hopefully whoever's here after us can love whatever we manage to actually preserve. So, I mean, I'll make this point. I've been to Japan. I went to Mount Fuji, right? You know, their icon. If you were to pick one piece of nature, that's Mount Fuji. You know what's at the base of Mount Fuji?
All kinds of hotels and stuff, right?
Well, even more so than that, there's a theme park. There's Fuji Q theme park where it's kind of rusty. I've never been there. I'm not going to say it's a terrible theme park, but look, Tokyo already has Disneyland. It has Tokyo Disney Seas. Osaka has Universal Studios. There's many, many theme parks throughout Japan. Do we really need one at the base of Mount Fuji?
So I don't know. I mean, I'll admit this is probably the less popular view, but I guess that's why we're having a debate.
Right.
But I like to see the innovation. I like to see what will crop up, what will be built.
Sure. Do you need that at the Grand Canyon? Do you want a roller coaster that, say, goes over the edge of the Grand Canyon then comes back? Do you need that? Because we have that in Las Vegas.
Cool.
Sure. Well, it's there in Las Vegas. It's not far off. You can just go to Vegas.
You're selling it to me right now.
Well, there's even higher. Listen, in that case, what about if it was even higher up on a skyscraper where it goes over and then comes back? That's what they have in Vegas. So you can have both. You can have your Disneyland. You can have your Disney Worlds. Okay, you can have your artificial lands that are, say, built on less than splendor land, right? Make use of it. You can have both. You shouldn't have only private lands that then destroy everything. I mean, if you look at any kind of dystopian future post-apocalyptic thing, it's always all the trees are dead, right? It's all barren. It's a concrete world because that's dismal. It speaks to something inside of us. You know, we're still animals, regardless of how fancy. We're very fancy animals. You know, these buildings out the side of us, they're very fancy beaver dams. or honeycombs, you know, that's all it is. So at the end of the day, you know, do we really want to turn everything into concrete versus having set aside nature?
Well, I'll push back on that, but I don't think everything would turn into concrete. I mean, it's obvious even the biggest industrials, capital barons in the 1800s, you know, like Carnegie and Rockefeller, they preserved some lands, you know. Now, not on the scale of the national park system.
Well, Rockefeller.
And it is tax dodging. Yeah, but
Rockefeller Jr. was instrumental in preserving things. So you mentioned the Great Smoky Mountains earlier. He, like, they put it to the public. If they want these to be a national park, you have to pay for yourselves. The public came up with $5 million. Rockefeller Jr. put up another $5 million in honor of his mother. So they were instrumental in preserving. And the Great Smoky Mountain, that's our most popular national park there is. It gets tens of millions of visitors each year.
So I don't necessarily, like I said, I don't admit that my view is necessarily the popular one.
That's not why you became a libertarian, was to chase what's popular?
Yeah, but I do think that we often, in this sort of debate, when we talk about preserving parks or, you know, any sort of other instrument that is controlled by the state, I think a lot of people romanticize it. They like you said, they have this dystopian hellscape picture of things. And, you know, I just think that you don't necessarily need the middleman. And with the middleman, you got to understand something else. The middleman is now the one profiting off of it. And they're the ones who are, you know, picking winners and losers in this situation. And, you know, again, the market could decide. And so what I was also going to say, we were talking about historic sites. So another one here in Lexington, Henry Clay's house, that's a private one. That's not run by the state at all. You know, and it's very nice. It has its own blooms and everything, and it's about 20 acres or so. And they, you know, they have their little admission fee that most people can afford, because if they didn't, no one would come. So I think it really comes down to people, what the argument I think people have for a national park or any type of thing like that is they want a larger unspoiled area. You know, you went back to Niagara there, right, where it was built up and chunked out in little sections.
Correct.
And, you know, I don't necessarily think it's a bad argument, but I do think there's a lot of unforeseen things that happen with that. Like, obviously, famously, the Bundy situation that happened, right? There was an agreement there. Supposedly, he thought he had to graze that land. I don't know what I would have been skeptical that I would have even had that agreement to begin with, to be honest with you,
because right.
I don't really trust authorities
yeah.
on that, but right, it ended up in shooting,
yeah.
you know, and so I just see it as another way that it could be weaponized, that it may not be weaponized with the free market, but I absolutely think the point is valid that, like, people see it as they want a big old Grand Canyon to see unspoiled for thousands of feet in any direction.
Yes.
Without money collectors.
Correct.
But that thing doesn't bother me. I think it's, you know, Fuji, I know there's stuff built up to it. There's a lot of stuff way up close to the pyramid too.
Yeah, that's Egypt. Correct. Like hotels yeah. and such.
Yeah.
Well, do you think, so for instance, if it comes down to a market, obviously you end up running into the Matthew principle here, where the very top, you know, the whole rich get richer, the very top percent are the ones who control everything else. You know, so Stephen King, J.K. Rowling, they sell between the few very top percent, they sell 90% of the book sales, right? So that's how our money works too. You know, the very, very rich own the bulk of many things, right? So do you want Jeff Bezos to own the Grand Canyon and Elon Musk to own Yellowstone? You know, you could say, well, maybe, you know, you keep mentioning the private owners, right? They control 6 million acres in America. These NGOs you mentioned, the national park control 85 million. So, you know, when we're doing, you know, comparisons here, who's maintaining what better? You can't really deny that 85 million or still exist. 85 million acres still exist. It's existed since the, you know, for about 100 years on average now at this point. We've done a pretty good job of preserving it. Should we really allow a couple billionaires to own the bulk of nature and then just say, nope, cut off, the rest of you can't come here? Not only the rest of Americans can't come here, we have claim to this land, not you. You know, the rest of the world can't come here, and we can do with it whatever we want.
Well, I, first of all, I don't think they would actually fully do that given the full reins, you know. And but, you know, again, this is going back to a sort of original principle before all this stuff happened, you know.
I'm sorry, can I push back on that? You don't think these super rich people would cut it off from everybody else being able to come and visit? If they bought the land themselves, you don't think they'd say, no, this is exclusive for me and my friends and family. You can't come here. You think it would still be...
I don't think they do that. No.
It depends on the individual, of course.
It depends on the individual. I don't think all of them would simultaneously... I don't think just because people have money, they're evil.
Oh, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there's a good percentage that will say, no, you can't come here. Let me... you're a married man, correct?
Yes.
Kelly Patrick, you're married?
I'm married, yes.
Okay, so you guys...
we're not married to each other.
Oh, okay. You recognize... Yes, correct.
I just want to get that
regardless, clarified. You went through the official government proceedings to get married and have that established. Now, you could have, obviously, are you a religious man?
Yes.
So, you know, more so, obviously, a religious thing, but it's also a government process. The national parks are a way for us to say, this is America. When you come here, this represents us. We handle it. There's law enforcement here. That's another thing. Private industry can't do that. You know, they could have private security, but again, on whose authority? If I give you a car and I tell you how fast you can drive it, when you can drive it, and I tell you that if you change the air freshener, I'm going to fine you, and I tell you that if you, you know, change the hood ornament, you're going to jail, is that really your car, or is it just stewardship? We're just giving you a little temporary ownership.
Well, the government already does that, so.
Yeah, it's going to get worse soon, but yeah.
But, no, I mean, if someone is purely capitalist, right, and they buy this supposed fancy cliff or whatever national park thing, they're not going to want
to
just...
Sorry to interrupt again. This is rude.
Yeah.
Is the Grand Canyon the fancy cliff? I just want to know.
No, okay. I'm just spitballing.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not pointing out any particular national park. Second of all, my whole argument also with this is my view is not popular. Like, I could not go in tomorrow and get everyone to vote with me on this. Okay. But I do think that if they were to go purchase it, they would want to. Everything's an investment to somebody, right?
Right.
And so I would think that if it really is something special, they're just going to want to invest in it and make it better, you know. And we see that with, like I said, there's all kinds of different attractions. Like there's Kentucky Down Under that has a cave next to it,
right?
So they're making money off of a cave, the same as the Mammoth Park exists, and their interests are virtually the same.
Yeah.
It's just the Mammoth Park interests are the federal government's interests and not these individual people. And so I don't necessarily, you know, again, there may be some instances where they block off a view and this and that, but, you know, I think it would spur more growth, and I think it actually caused more growth in these areas. Now, you're just anti-growth. You're, you know, that's a whole nother thing, right? I can't really argue against that.
Well, so it depends on what we define as growth. So you're saying, in other words, let's say you bring up Kentucky Down Under and you bring up Mammoth Cave. They seem to work well together, by the way. Here's a private company. Right. Here's a government-run land. Those work pretty well together in conjunction, right? But you would rather it all be private. So that's what I'm asking you. You think that all of it being private would have more growth. So again, that you end up coming into the Las Vegas territory of building ever higher, more bright structures to compete with one another. Do you think that would be better for nature? That's the whole point here that I'm asking you.
Well,
building. Go ahead.
So I mean, it just comes back to fundamentally how you, like you said, how you view nature, and you clearly view it where there has to be some wild space, you know, nature has to be on a larger scale.
Yes.
And that's where I fundamentally just, I don't necessarily see it that way, I believe.
So what would be better then? What would draw in more people and be better for the public benefit and better for future generations?
Smaller plots, you know, and even like allowing people to get land. Cause I think we're lucky in America that it hasn't gotten this bad, you know, with, cost of living and stuff, but in Canada, 93% of the land is federally owned. Yeah, and my friends, you know, they're complaining about housing costs there constantly. You brought up Niagara Falls earlier, and it's four times as much to buy the same plot of land on the Canadian side of Niagara Falls as the New York side. And I said to them, well, shoot, why don't you all just give away some land? Right? for people to build houses, you know?
I mean, you can always have extremes in either way. Like, you can you can definitely have extremes either way. And this is actually a big problem in general. The Sierra Club, if you know about the Sierra Club, they split in drastically different directions on the topic of immigration. So when we start getting into the housing cost debate, I'm sorry, but no, cutting into the national parks isn't going to fix that. There's many other solutions that are a lot quicker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. I'm not saying it's the immediate fix. I'm just saying that that is where I think economic and growth would happen if people, you know, and again, it just, it's kind of a sticky situation because even in like the Hoosier National Forest, for example, they came back and declared it national forest after the fact. So some people have grandfathered in houses in there, which is interesting, right? That's sort of weird. It's like, I'm a landowner, but actually I'm in the federal forest. So.
And life is all about balance, right? Like you just mentioned Canada's 93% government-owned land. That's going to not be as that's obviously an extreme in the other direction. But 85 million acres set aside in America, that doesn't sound that egregious to me.
No, and like I said, I don't necessarily think you are in bad faith. I think it's just a scale thing. And when people get concerned, you know, when they don't think that there's this open land for creatures to roam through and stuff, and I think sometimes we just forget about how adaptable, you know, human race and nature is, you know. And
well, it's not gonna be the end of the world, but again, you have to find a way to find your own values. The thing with this is we're talking about beauty, and a lot of times that ends up being subjective, right? Well,
you know,
what's beautiful to one person may not be beautiful another. Maybe I like blondes, maybe you like brunettes, right? The thing is at the end of the day, there are still movie stars. There's still pretty much a standard symmetrical objective where you can say, no, this is beautiful. Like, you can't really take, you sparsely ever find someone that you could take, say, to, you know, Bryce Canyon and then not be kind of blown away by it, right? It, very, very rare people will be like, oh, yeah, whatever, big deal, it's a hole and some trees. You know, that's the whole thing is, wow, this is a sight to see. That's why millions of people go there. There is a standard of beauty. So for us to take that away from future generations is more than greedy, and it's myopic.
Well, and again, we don't necessarily know it would be taken fully away, right? We're assuming that if you put in actors, it'd be fully taken away. But again, it's not necessarily, you know.
Well, what's the
just kind of depends who manages it and how they manage it.
So what's the benefit of risking that, though?
I would say the benefit is, you know, economic and social, or I would say the benefit is economic growth. Okay. You know, there'd be even more money flowing in, and your interests wouldn't be competing with a constant hazy in the background public good. Because again, like I said, the debate that really got me into this debate a little bit was the state park debate that was happening in Indiana. There were activists coming out trying to chain themselves to trees,
right?
Trying to get them not to chop down a tree. And I'm like, the state park needs to chop down that tree. What if it's dead?
Right. Who knows? It might have some kind of horrible pathogen in it. There could be any reasons to get rid of a tree.
Would either of you guys ever chain yourself to a tree?
Sure.
No.
Why not? Depends on what the circumstance was. Just for the fun of it? Yeah.
So I think that's really, I just think that we need that by running it privately. Mm-hmm. If the people cared about it, and I will grant you, we don't know that necessarily the private owner would care about it, but if they cared about it, they could just care about it then and not be beholden to all these other interests because it's a government-run thing.
I put it to you that we already have a 14.6 ROI, 14.6 times ROI. That's amazing. You know, if you invested $1,000 and got $14,000 back, that's pretty good. That's better than most anything else you see in government. They're already profitable. And it's very much, that's going to be my argument today. If it's not broke, don't fix it. We've managed to preserve through the actions of these visionary people to say, hey, we need to set this aside. Let's not have this be destroyed for individuals. And, you know, an individual, this is a tree versus a forest situation, right? You know, one person can say, hey, this will benefit me to take care of this. And, you know, I can make some money off of this versus, are you actually thinking in terms, you know, an individual only thinks in certain time frame of their life. A government should be thinking generations, thousands of years. You know, what is our overall value system here? So that's a pretty big risk.
I would kind of put to you, though, our government doesn't think that far. you know, our national government thinks election to election, I would say.
I would say that's true. And I also, even presidents, that's always the thing people are obsessed about. They don't really care about the local government. They care about the presidency. And at what is it, 4 to 8 years tops? Even that is kind of short-sighted to have a true ruler. You know, this is past the days of kings where one king, if you have a good king, they can rule and preserve things for as long as possible for their lifespan. But the problem with this always ends up being, you know, the weak men create bad times create strong. It ends up being that regardless. How do we pass on our value system to really, truly maintain what we have? And if it was just up to the individuals with no sort of law in place, I put it to you that a lot of these things would be gone. And once they're gone, they're gone. It's toothpaste out of a tube. You're not getting it back. Now, you say that nature's adaptable, and it is. Sure. You know, eventually vines will grow around the rusted roller coasters. You know, maybe that'll look cool in its own way. But is it is it the same grandeur and beauty that we have presently? I don't think so.
And again, that's sort of what I think the crux of where we part ways here, right, is where that doesn't bother me in the same way it impacts other people. Right. You know,
and I would put it to you, and I don't think you would disagree that you're in the minority of that thinking, that most people.
I am absolutely in the minority.
Unspoiled.
And it is sort of a view that I think, again, adaptability of nature and adaptability of humanity, you know, creates different things using that sort of stuff. And it can be good or it could be bad, but, you know.
Well, you bring up humans. Humans are unique in animals in that we control ecosystems. Other animals, not so much. We have the responsibility, you know, as Carl Sagan said, we're the universe's way of knowing itself. We're basically the mind. We see it, we interpret it, we study it, we're curious, we actually make, we try to actually conserve species and save them and bring them back from extinction. We do all these amazing things. We can also be incredibly destructive and end species and end entire swaths of land. You know, we're responsible for who knows how much, 90% of the destruction of the Amazon rainforest for soybeans. Like, that's not, you know, who knows what, you know, that's where oxygen, a huge portion of oxygen comes from, you know, and we destroyed that for temporary profits. And that's my point, is that's very myopic.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think a lot of people have their feelings about the rainforest thing. But I also do think from the converse side, right, because, you know, there's the environmentalist class who profits off of environmental outrage.
Sure.
that stuff also gets skewed in the other direction as well. I read a really great book back in the day called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming. And it definitely opened my eyes to sort of some of the activist class stuff. And I don't want to come off as like completely anti-environment. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying there's definitely, like I said, it's just an interest thing that once a land is put into the government interest, there's going to be this, you know, and you've said before, you think the hazy background for the common good is what's it's beneficial in this case, right? Whereas, you know, I focus too much on the extreme cases, like what happened with the Bundy thing or what happened with,
money's fake and gay. Just to sum this up really quick, trees are real. So to say a hazy public good. If you and I, if I could take you to Bryce Canyon, if I could take you to Zion National Park, if I could take you to Kauai and show you the tropical park there, you know what I mean? A rainforest that's, you know, outside of an ocean. A pretty, you know, I don't, maybe, you know, you're in your 40s. You're pretty well set in your mindset. But these are beautiful sites for a reason. And to destroy them forever, where they're not going to come back, especially in our lifetime, maybe, you know, sure, they formed over tens and tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years. We'll get it back. But that's going to be, you know, generations upon generations that won't get to see the same things we saw. That makes us selfish, you know? If you and I get pizza and say you go to the bathroom and I manage to eat it all and save you a slice when you get back, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you know, that's my fault for leaving the pizza in front of you.
You say what? So, but I'm saying that's a selfish act, right? Didn't consider
it's a selfish act, but it's also my fault. I mean.
Well, it may that's not
a,
be.
I get it.
For people who aren't born yet, it's not their fault. They can't do anything about it. I guess you should have been born sooner, sucker, you know?
Well, I just see it as, you know, there's other things that have been preserved without needing the government involved, you know? So, but I mean, I take your point. I'm not saying your point's bad. You know, I'm sure more people probably would agree with you than me.
We need to bring racism or start insulting or something. Look at this man. He's bored.
No, I'm not bored.
He's on
his
phone.
I was actually going to interrupt. When Alex said money is faking gay,
yeah.
I could hear in my mind Austrian economist Gene Epstein saying, what? You know, I don't think a lot of the Austrian... Charles, I'll ask you. This is a little different topic. He said money's faking gay. What do you think of that?
Well, money... soft currency right. In paper is fake.
Fake and gay.
But gold. It represents a value that people think things are.
Right.
Everything has a value, even when the government's involved, and the government often fakes the values. But, again, I think it just goes back to this point of what the interests are competing. And, you know, in the Bundy situation, right, the government didn't honor a contract, which it doesn't do all the time. Now, you could argue private people won't honor a contract either, but, you know...
They're not going to come at you with the military if you...
I would put that you have a better chance of getting restitution from a private person not honoring contract than the government.
And how would you get that restitution?
Well, you know, in the Wild West, they had old-fashioned ways of getting restitution.
Sure, but what did you mean?
I would say courts, you know.
Courts, so government.
Yeah, so, yeah. But, you know, there is, I don't necessarily believe there needs to be no contract court. I absolutely think there has to be a contract court. I'm not a total anarchist. I'm a minarchist.
I agree with you. Yeah, so those are some of the few things I came to that I think government does better. You have to have unbiased arbiters. So in other words, if I have my own private police force and you have your private police force, well, now we're just in Gangs of New York and our cops are fighting, you know, because innately they're going to be beholden to who pays them. And that for courts, even more so. There's no way you can have a private court system.
I think many anarchists would argue against that.
Oh, yeah. They definitely come on here and they're going to flame us in the comment section.
Yes.
For saying you should just not have courts or to say you should have private suggesting judges.
That there's no way to have, I know it sounds utopian, but for suggesting that there's no way in an entirely privatized anarcho society to have a privatized court system. Even the death penalty, life sentences in prison. I know that it sounds, you know, theoretical or utopian. It sounds naive to you. I would say from the anarcho perspective.
Money talks. That's all. So, I mean, you know, you're not really going to have, I mean, it's already, our court systems are already flawed, of course, you know, but when you start throwing money into it and it's okay, well, hey, we're actually going to use my judges to arbitrate that. The whole thing of an arbitration is you and I have a conflict. This person's as unbiased as possible. We need them to decide. If you're paying them or I'm paying them, none of us would agree that that's going to be an unbiased arbiter. And that back to that, my whole point with this debate is we need an unbiased arbiter. We need someone to say, to cut this portion of land off. Again, 85 million acres is what we have so far. That's off. You can't mine here. You can't strip mine. There's still commerce there, by the way. There are still hotels in designated areas. There's still restaurants there. So it's not to say, you know, we built roads there. It's accessible to people who have wheelchairs and can't physically hike. And, I mean, we've made our changes. We've put our human handprints all over it, but we've done our best to still maintain the beauty as much as we can.
And I guess, like I said, you know, I've seen several examples of where privatized situations like that have also worked.
For sure. For sure.
You know, and so that's where I think where, like I said, where the central theme of this argument is that I think you... I would say the majority of the public, if we put up a poll right now, I would say the majority of the public would agree with you no matter what I said.
Well, popularity doesn't mean right, though. So.
Which, you know, that's kind of my life story in general. But they would put it up right and they would say that. But if you put it in the government interest, they have to take into other things into account. Purely then preserving their land. And that's where I think, again, and restitution, I just can't get over this enough. I mean, we've seen several instances, again, like the Bundy situation. Although, again, those, I would admit those are probably not what I would call super common, maybe. Although, you know, there was a lot of fight over the reservations back in the day.
Right.
But, you know, just several situations where the government, because it owns this land and maintains these parks, if you have a grievance, they won't honor your contract. They will do whatever's popular then. Chris Christie will shut down the government and then hang out on the public beach.
Yeah.
You know, right. So that's why I would think that the private interest, you would be better off, because then with the private interest, you know, you're maintaining your land to make profit. It's not profitable for you to close down your beach.
Well, when you go into private, so if you're buying stock, what's the whole point of buying stock if not to sell it later whenever it's profitable, right? So yeah. The idea of, again, this undermines the idea of this being generational.
I don't know if Warren Buffett would agree with that. His whole strategy is buy and hold.
Well, I understand that, but as far as compared to, say, most people, buy and hold.
Other than the best one to ever do it, sure.
I'm guessing what? So what does he make his money off? Dividends?
All sorts of different ways, sure. I think.
Yeah.
But regardless, you're finding ways to make your money, and a big portion, regardless of that. I'm sure Warren Buffett has still sold stocks, right? He still sold businesses. He hasn't just bought and held everything. Part of owning something is the ability to sell it, right?
Certainly part of owning something.
Yeah, and that's a big portion of it. So, okay, he, you know, maybe he maintains and has a different strategy. That doesn't mean that that's the norm, you know? And it also, even still, you have to have the ability to sell it. That's kind of my point. So if you're selling it and breaking it down, and, you know, we're talking stocks where they then, you know, hey, you bought this much and there was this many stocks. Now, what's it called when they break apart into?
Split.
Split, yeah. So when they split,
yeah.
When they start splitting and everything else, like, okay, well, now you start splitting off land. Hey, instead of just having one big owner, I can sell this portion here for a profit here. I can sell this portion here. And who knows? You end up with Disney World. And Disney World's great. Not the whole country shouldn't be Disney World.
Yeah, I think that is where the fundamental difference is.
I think it comes down to like a pro-government versus anarcho-type argument, really. This is a good topic. I know you had been pushing for a debate on this for a while, Alex.
Right. Yeah.
This was the one that you kind of thought was, because this embodies if there's such thing as something the government should be in charge of.
Right. I used to be a freedom zealot. I thought, so whenever you have conflicting values, you know, you have freedom, security, order, and equality. And all of those, the more you gain of one, the more you lose of the others. And I was a freedom to the utmost, right? But then I realized it doesn't matter. You have to somewhat have order. You have to have some balance, right? If you don't have order, then you lose everything. You know, water, so, you know, this container here is filled with water. I don't actually know. It may be moonshine. But regardless, the water is what keeps us alive, right? Like, the water's crucial. That's freedom. But without the security of this, well, then you just have water on the ground that's inaccessible to you and you're dead. So you have to have both. Life's about balance.
Again, like I said, I think the biggest issue, though, is the honoring contracts, the history there. And again, you know, if we try to figure out how to phrase what I'm trying to say here. So, you know, I think it can be successfully done. And I think people, I don't want to see, for instance, any of these park rangers fired necessarily, right? Like, I'm not talking like a wholesale transfer immediately, right? But I think they would be freed more to do the things that they'd want to do without having to be beholden to this historical interest. And I think that's where the fundamental disagreement is there, where, you know, and I have Teddy Roosevelt books on my bookshelf as well. So, but, who? You know, that was where he differed. He definitely looked at these things and said, these things are what I think is beautiful and need to be preserved, and we need a National Park Service. So it's just a little bit of it's a different type of worldview, I think. And I don't know. I think as time goes on, though, we will sort of see more conflict erupting over this. I think it will be politicized more, unfortunately. And that, you know, that's where it's kind of like in your situation, Alex, I think you'd be upset that I'd be right over time, that it would become more politicized and people will try and spin it, the parks, to be, you know, what they want the government to look like rather than just preserved for the sake of preserving it.
Well, they are preserved, though. When we're talking history, I mean, Andrew Jackson set aside some geysers that are still set aside. They're unmolested. I mean, that's the 1830s at this point. You know, the Yellowstone was set aside. Yosemite back in the 1860s, 1870s. Again, most of the national parks that we can point to were at the latest the 1900s, like 1912, 1924. So we already have over a century of these being pretty much unchanged. Now, could something change in the future? Sure. But to what end? You know, they're already preserved. They're preserved enough for us to be able to debate. If they weren't, like, nobody's debating about some random strip mall you know, in Lexington, Kentucky, right? Nobody's saying, you have to leave this strip mall alone. You know, for the most part, I mean, you might get some people who have nostalgia for it, you know, if it was going to be bulldozed or
that's
something.
That's where I got my first lap dance.
Right. But my
no, I mean, there is some nostalgia in that aspect. You know, we see the debate happening over old industrial spaces now.
Right. But my point is we still have these lands. The National Park Service and government control has worked to say, hey, this still exists. Now, have some of it burned down, like I mentioned in 1988? Yeah, we make mistakes. Humans make mistakes, you know. And this isn't me telling you, okay, that's like me saying, okay, well, we shouldn't have companies because of Enron. Enron was corrupt and swindled people. Well, no, yeah, that's a bad company. That's a bad example, you know. It doesn't mean that all
there are people that would argue that, though. Luckily, they're not on this debate,
right.
But goofballs. That would be the other extreme from that angle.
I have a question.
Yeah.
My wife is from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to put a positive spin on anything the Cuban government has ever done, it could be the reefs, the nature has been truly unmolested for a long time. There's minimal pollution. There's beautiful beaches. You know, the fish that have survived. I think I watched a special one time that there's many. I think it's one of the beaches or the areas that has some of the widest variety of different fish who've survived over a long time. You being more on the right, Alex, I think this is a good example for me to try to ask you. Are you suggesting what Cuba has done is a good thing?
Yeah, in that regard, that's basically the whole argument I'm making. There's always, I mean, obviously you could point to this is bad, that's bad, they're, you know, this is a problem, this is tyrannical. But if we're saying that, hey, in this instance, the nature's preserved, then yeah, that was my whole point of this to begin with, is that government in this one instance, you know, and there's probably some others, military, you know, the military, and even that, you know, my friend Jared point this out, but Eric Prince would say otherwise. You can't have a private military, right? And they could probably be great and amazing, but to a certain extent, there are certain things that involve bureaucracy, as gross of a word as it is, and we hate it. We hate it in almost everything, right? Bureaucrats, they make almost everything worse. They have some function.
What about the police?
Again, yes, I think there should be government-run police, not...
Well, then where does this end? So you're pro-government. That's okay.
You're pro-government. Yeah. Again, the order here of this wonderful ball. You're pro-government. You have this cup here. You're not just slurping water out from a stream.
I mean, the converse argument, obviously, if you're going to bring up Cuba, is how poor the average Cuban lives.
No, Charles, that's irrelevant. We can't.
I didn't say it's irrelevant. I haven't made the argument here that we shouldn't have any industry, or that Disney World shouldn't exist, or that there should be any private lands or private, you know, you mentioned Bernheim. Yeah. I'm definitely not telling you that all land should be run by the government. Definitely not. I'm saying that our most important that represent our country, when you come here from elsewhere, or, you know, say if aliens came here and we went to show them around, this is what we have. Look at the beauty of Earth. Look at the beauty of America. America is pretty unique in that we have basically every ecosystem in one land. It is a beautiful land from east to west, from north to south, and preserving as much of that as possible for other people to come and see. It's a way of, you know, yeah, you're showing off, you know, if you have people over your house, hey, check out my land here. Check out this creek here. Look at my wall art here. It's a pretty normal thing for humans to want to do. And also, it's not just up to us. You know, it's not just for humans alone. Humans have a responsibility to try to preserve it for everything.
Yeah, well, and I think that is just where, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what else to say to it. You know, like I said, I think in people can preserve just as well in smaller portions, but I do understand my view is not a popular worldview. So, but that's why I took up the argument.
Yeah, sometimes
no one's coming here and, you know, no one's coming here and put forth the argument, hey, there's all these privately run lands that people use that are beautiful in their own right.
Well, let's look at it this way. I am such a far right gun extremist that I think Elon Musk should be allowed to have nuclear weapons. You know, that's the Second Amendment. Is he going to use them any way else? You know, like, is he going to be any more irresponsible with his bombs? Now, if you start getting to where nukes were so readily available that everyone could have them, yeah, that's not going to be a good sign, you know? So all I'm saying is that, you know.
So that would be the privatized military argument.
Privatized military, yeah.
So that means you do
Oh, you can have, oh no, this isn't a gotcha. It's not a gotcha. I already said, I said you could have a private security.
I feel like this is a double gang. You know?
I said you could have
sorry, Charles.
Oh, bring it.
Full disclosure, I'm a libertarian too, in case anyone didn't know.
I already said in America.
I would have ganged up on this guy.
Bring it. No. I said you can have Disney World and you can have Yellowstone. You can have private security. I didn't tell you couldn't have private security. Of course you can. If you
but
can
it just has to be regulated by the government.
No, I'm saying that if you and I come into conflict, we can't rely on your private security that's beholden to you. So yes, you need an unbiased police force, an unbiased court system. That doesn't mean you can't have your own private security guards, of course, or private military. If you have your own private military and you can afford tanks, I'm not against that. If you can afford aircraft carriers, if you were that rich, go bananas. That's on you. So I'm not telling you can't have a privatized military, privatized police force for yourself. But it shouldn't be the norm. Here's the thing. Poor people, and this is the word I always get on, because again, I'm used to arguing with leftists. Access. They always say access. No, I need access to clean water. Access to clean water to a leftist means, hey, you own a water company. You need to come and build this for free, and I need your labor for free. Mm-hmm. That's pro-slavery. I'm not for that. But if you can afford your own private security, great. But everyone should have access to security, just as everyone should have access to beautiful nature reserves and to go and see the resplendent parts of our country without it just being, no, it's only for the rich.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, we didn't argue. You told me you weren't against entrance fees, so.
No, I'm not against. I've paid entrance fees. I don't care that for that. You know, that's fine.
Because I would argue that not anyone should just be able to walk up, because that gets into a whole vandalism sort of issue. That
for sure. I don't disagree with that. And also, let's say you can't afford it. Okay, you work for an hour, you can come in. It shouldn't be expensive. Yeah. But I'm not against entrance fees. You know, we have entrance fees, by the way. The national parks take in $300 million in entrance fees. So $300 million a year, that's not as much compared to the $3.4 billion that we spend, or $3.8 billion in 2024, but it's still something to kind of off balance it, let alone all the economic benefits that I mentioned earlier. So,
Charles, do your kids agree with your stance on parks?
I think they just go, they probably see things as more beautiful as me, but they're kids, so,
Yeah.
I'll admit I am sort of always leaning on the side of money, so. I'm not in a greedy way necessarily. I want everybody to have money. I want everybody to take their innovations to the market and use them, And that's where I think, again, government's the limiting factor a little bit on nature.
And that's just it. I agree with you. So this is the whole point that helped me come up with this to begin with, and where this started. It started on a random comment with Kelly Patrick here, is government is a limiting factor. Government is slow, it's inefficient, it's cumbersome, it's not quick to turn on a dime like a market, okay? That's the whole point, is I don't want nature changed. I want it to remain intact, unchanged, as is.
Okay.
And it just doesn't bother me as much as other people, which I don't know if that's some type of moral failing on my part. Or
it means people have different values.
It means you're a piece of garbage, Charles.
It probably does. I'm probably going to get hate mail after this.
Well, no one road gets you to every destination, right? If it was just left to, say, the environmentalists you mentioned earlier, then there'd be no industry, and they'd die very quickly.
Yeah.
I want to give a quick commercial for my health insurance practice. Anyone in the state of Kentucky who needs group health insurance for a small business as small as one or two employees, I can help you. I'm an independent broker. Anyone who needs individual health insurance, hit me up, Kelly Patrick. You know how to get a hold of me. Medicare. Independent broker, I can do just as well as anyone. And consistent with that, my website is MedicareStoreUSA.com. I'm doing a ticket giveaway for Friday, June 19th, 2026. Freedom Hall, LFA, the number one feeder organization for the UFC, will be at Freedom Hall. We have 9 local fighters fighting on the card. If you want to go to the event, go to the Bittersweet Battles Instagram page, comment on one of the photos and say, MedicareStoreUSA.com, put me in the running for it, put me in the drawing, mention the website and say, put me in the LFA ticket giveaway, and we're going to draw on June 5th, so we just got about a week. So get it in there, go to the LFA with some really good tickets for free. That's my commercial.
It's a good commercial.
That's a good commercial.
I didn't make it up.
Yeah.
It was someone else.
That was one take, though.
Yeah, well, I had someone, Eddie Donaldson coached me through it, so.
There you go.
Charles, before we wrap things up, anything you would like to promote or suggest the viewers visit or do, call to action, anything fun like that?
Oh, yeah, we can do call to actions because we're not the radio that I got banned from for call to actions. No. I would just say, you know, not every solution needs the government, you know. And so if you want to learn sort of more about figuring out where you think that, because I think a lot of people are very skeptical of the way government's been managing virtually everything in our lives in the past couple decades. So if you want to learn more about that, I would encourage, you know, checking out, you know, me and Kelly are libertarians, so you can check out some of our propaganda, LPKY. But you could also just check out sort of writings by the Austrian School of Economics, or one of my favorite authors is Thomas Sowell. Oh, yeah. I would suggest reading Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell. But it'll give you more.
Vision of the Anointed, too.
What's that?
Vision of the Anointed. That's my favorite of his.
So that'll give you sort of another perspective on things that you don't necessarily get in the government-run schools. And I think that helps you take a wider worldview where you can question sort of the premise of something like this that's a little bit deeper, right? Like, why are we preserving it? You know?
Good stuff. Alex, I'll ask you the same. Anything you'd like to promote? Any call to action for our viewers?
Nothing much. If you're interested in martial arts, there's obviously a great number of them. If you're in Indiana, check out Southern Indiana Martial Arts.
Alex is a brown belt instructor there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Nice.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Jason, if you're watching this, just give me my black belt. See, it's better for marketing. When he says I'm a brown belt.
Brown belt doesn't sound as cool. Yeah.
I've been a two-stripe brown belt for, you know, 2 years and some change.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
So
he's holding out on you?
He's holding out
Jason
on me.
Dempster
Jason
is
Jason Dempster, you're holding out on me.
Oh, my
look, God. We could have gotten another. So now we're only going to get like two students. We could get four.
It did not sound as cool. Who it wants to learn from a brown belt?
Brown belts don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you very much, Charles, Alex. I appreciate you both coming on the show.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Nice meeting you.
I love that we got to do something that normal people wouldn't debate. Yeah. So.
Not in this century, yeah.
Normal people won't debate, and then even fewer of them will actually listen to.
Right.
Yeah. I'm kidding. It's intellectually stimulating for us. We enjoy it, so that's enough.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Quick, let's shove in some insults and racism.
For ratings. Good stuff, guys. Thank you for coming on. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Kelly Patrick Show. Of course, we'll have another episode out soon. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Talk to you all later. Thanks
a lot, guys.